You know our slogan around here is better practice, better life. But we're taking this belief to the next level. And we've recently announced the creation of a new association. It's called the Best Practices Association. Our association celebrates the mindset that is better practice, better life. This mindset celebrates time, healthy living, personal growth, clinical excellence, and impacting the lives of your patients and your team through intentional leadership. In fact, we are the work-life balance experts in dentistry. The BPA will coach independent dental practices like yours to thrive by sharing best practices and operational habits, behaviors, systems, tools, and insight that lead to profitability and sustained growth, and you can still have a life. So if you're a dentist that wants to surround yourself with great thinkers, let us help you create your own version of better practice, better life. Go to actdental.com/BPA or hit the link in the show notes. Guys, thanks for tuning in to the Best Practices Show, where we take a look at the best business practices from the best practices all over. And man, do I have a treat for you today. I've got a good friend of mine who's a freaking brilliant clinical mind, Dr. Lenny Hess from the Dawson Academy. We're going to be talking about how to create a practice that's truly special in the marketplace so you can move away from PPOs and be a little bit more fee-for-service. And it's not as easy as you think, but it's also not as complex as you think. And he's going to dissect this, and you're going to absolutely love this. And you're going to see why he's the clinical director down at the Dawson Academy. So you're going to love this. So stick around and hit the share button and grab a pen. Now, before we get started, I always like to say this. I get these questions all the time from young dentists who are like, okay, so I joined the conference thing and what is this podcast thing you speak of? Well, let me share you what that is. I don't even know what I'm doing. I just enjoy it. And I was talking to Lenny before we went live. Like, it's crazy how we do all these videos. You guys never watch them. I'm totally cool with that. If there's a way I can find to make the living just doing podcasts, I think I will, because I can't shut up. And my wife is like, you need to go talk to somebody. So this is the way I get to talk to all my friends and dentistry. So it's called the Best Practice Show. So I know you're not watching this, or maybe you're watching this. Okay, so if you're listening to this right now and you're a young dentist and you're like, what the heck is this? Do me a favor. Pull over the car first, and then just see that little button right there? It says subscribe. Just hit the subscribe button. I don't care if you're listening to this, Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play, whatever. I want you to hit the subscribe button because I want you to keep showing up. And here's why. Every single week, you're going to see I'm going to bring you a brand new expert in dentistry, because I really don't know that much. That's why I hang around with people like Lenny that are really smart, and we'll ask them the questions. And I'll keep bringing you great experts every single week so that you guys can create a better practice and a better life. And I just don't want you to miss out. So make sure you do that. Number two, some of you ask the question, like, what the heck do you do? I'm like, I don't even know what I do. You know, our core business, we're practice coaches. So I'll tell you real simple. If you're a practice owner and you're like, okay, listen, I got this team and they're not getting along very well, and I don't know if I'm the best leader, and I got two people at the front, they're kind of fighting. Like, that's what we do. We make cultures healthy. Or here's another one. If you're kind of looking at your write-offs with Delta and you're like, wow, I give away 35% every single year, and that's a lot of money, and you don't want to do that anymore, that's what I do. Or if you're like, okay, listen, I don't like my work schedule. I don't like working evenings, Saturdays, or I want a better work life. Like, I wonder if I could work 7 to 3, 4 days a week. That's what we do. So check us out at actdental.com and just create a better. Here's what I want. I want you to go to work and say, I love how I do it. You don't have to do it how anybody else does it, but that's what we do. So if you're interested, show up over there. Now I want to introduce my guest, because today we're going to be talking about what I just alluded to, which is I want you to enjoy going to work. And my journey started where this guy is at, which is the Dawson Academy. And I went to see this dentist speak. And Lenny, you've heard me tell this a million times. And that's why I'm excited to have you. So when I was 24, I thought I had everything figured out. You know, I had hair back then. I had a nice tie. And I was like, you know, one of my mentors goes, you're going to go see this dentist speak. And I'm like, okay, so where is it? He goes, it's in Boston. I'm like, well, okay. So he's 64. I'm like, okay, well, I'm 24. Like, what's he going to teach me? And it was called How to Put Your Practice in the Top 10%. I remember thinking, I don't want to be here. Like, what's this old dentist going to teach me? And it truly was some of my favorite education ever. And I was moved in the first day. And what was even better was I went up to the man halfway through the day and I was like, I didn't even want to be here. And he's like, where are you from? And I told him, and then I got to sit with him at lunch, which I thought was the coolest thing ever. And to this day, I wrote him a letter. And you know what he did? He wrote me back. And I don't think I've seen it since. And I still have it. I've saved it in plastic forever. And it's just a statement of how cool the heart was behind the engine that we're going to be talking about. And his name was Dr. Peter Dawson. And I'll never forget his words. And so it forever changed me because I thought I had it all figured out. And I realized I didn't. And Lenny, I don't know if I've told you this one, but at the end of the first time I met him, I went up to him. I said, Dr. Dawson, I have enjoyed this so much. What's the one piece of advice you would give me, like getting involved in dentistry? He goes, that's a good question. I would say this. Don't ever tell yourself you have it all figured out. Because even at my age, I learned so much from the dentist that I trained at the Dawson Academy. He goes, Kirk, and the other thing you learn is anytime you're around a dentist that has it all figured out, they're not that much fun to hang around with. He goes, keep your brain open. Keep asking questions. I'm asking kids all the time, what do you think of that? And I'm learning all the time. So, Lenny, I'm so excited to have you here today. And I want you to do two things before we get started. I always like people to know who you are because I've had you on. I love you, dear. I think you're amazing. I also want people to know what the Dawson Academy is. So if there's a young dentist, and we actually have dental students listening now, if you don't know what the Dawson Academy is, I'm just telling you right now, you got to go check it out. There's going to be a link in the show notes. So who's Lenny Hess and what's the Dawson Academy?
Yeah, you know, well, before I say that, Kirk, let me just add on the conversation that you just had about Pete and about the fact that he gave you a handwritten note and how special that was, and kind of use that as a lead into, you know, the Dawson Academy. That's exactly what the Dawson Academy is. We're an organization that our motto is that we like to make good dentists better. And what we don't want to do is, you know, when we talk about what we are at the Academy is we are not a shame-based organization. We're not there to make people feel bad about their past. What we're there to do, Kirk, is to give them optimism about their future. And, you know, what we want to do is just continue to spread that spirit that Dr. Dawson had, you know, that loving, nurturing person and that attitude that he has that was just so exceptional. And so when I say, like, who am I, is, you know, I'm somebody that was really influenced by Pete. You know, I'm a general dentist. I practice in the suburbs of Charlotte, North Carolina. And, you know, I'm like most other dentists out there, besides the fact that I stumbled, luckily, into the knowledge pool, so to speak. I started drowning right out of school in the knowledge pool that Dr. Dawson had about how do we make dentistry fun? How do we make it predictable? How do we make it profitable? And, you know, and I've just been applying these principles over the years, and I've gotten the opportunity and the privilege to be able to share this information over time with other dentists, and have just kind of worked my way up in the lecture circuit. And here I am about 20 years later, I found myself as the clinical director of the Dawson Academy, which is, you know, sometimes I can't even believe it. But at the same time, like, I wouldn't tell you that I didn't have that intention at very early on in my career, because I always kind of had this roadmap to get to that point. But that's what I am, is I am just like every other dentist. I practice in a rural county. I have patients that have insurance. I have patients that have been accustomed to the standard of care, which is insurance-based in this country, which is pretty awful, to be honest with you. You know, most of our patients are actually, over their lifetime, are being grossly undertreated. And a lot of times there's criticism in the press out there, or Reader's Digest articles, or there'll be one of those gotcha pieces in the media, or what have you, where they try to villainize dentists and act like we're over-treating people or trying to do things unethically. But I'm going to be honest with you, what I find in my practice is that most people have been undertreated over their lifetime, which is why they get to be 50 or 60 years old and they're really frustrated with the level of health that they've attained. And it's simply because of the standard of care, which is being dictated by insurance and a $1,500 a year minimum or maximum and all that good stuff. But yeah, I still remember when I got my first handwritten note from Pete. I still remember the first time he looked, I was walking down the hallway and he said, "Hey, Lenny." And I said, "Was there's another Lenny here? I can't believe that." I was looking around me trying to see who in the world it was. But you know, what's crazy? You know, what's crazy about Dr. Dawson, and a lot of people have met him over the years, and nearly every dentist in the world has actually been influenced by him. And I want you to think about that statement. Nearly every dentist in the world has been influenced by Dr. Dawson. And they may not know it directly, but a lot of it is indirect, because a lot of the concepts that we take for granted today when it comes to function and occlusion, a lot of these concepts were concepts that were introduced or were actually proven away from a theoretical standpoint and proven by a scientific methodology to be true. And it's just amazing when you think about it. You know, his first textbook that he wrote, which is, you know, there's the third generation of it out there now, and it's the best-selling textbook in dentistry. You know, he wrote that thing when he was like 32 and 33 years old.
That's
crazy.
Think
about that. I mean, who has the right to write a textbook on that level when they're 32 or 33 years old? I mean, he was just an anomaly of a person. It's crazy.
Yeah, I can't even dress myself now, much less being able. Like, that's amazing that he was able to do it. And then the other thing too, like, he was just a humble giant. You know, I remember seeing him at the Restorative Academy and the AES meeting. And this was, you know, a couple of years ago, and he go, "Come here," and he'd give me a hug, and I'm like, "Oh, I get a hug from the man." And he's like, "You still taking care of your wife?" I was like, "Yeah, good to see you." And then he didn't like my presentation one year, because I did a thing on younger next year, and after 80, the graph goes like that. He goes, "I loved your presentation. Didn't like your graph. Your graph should go like that after 80. I'm like, "It wasn't my graph." And so it was, just a special, special person. So,
well, you know, he was like an 88-year-old rock star there when he was passing away, because, you know, if you ever went out to eat, you know, during the big conference week in Chicago every year, when it was Equilibration Society or, you know, American Academy of Fixed Pros or the Restorative Academy, you go out to dinner with Pete, and, you know, it's like having dinner with a celebrity. He might as well be Brad Pitt, because every dentist in the world is in town that week, and they're all trying to, if they see him at a restaurant, everybody wants to come up and say hello and shake his hand and just, you know, talk about what he meant to them at different points in their career and everything. And he was just such a special person. He really was. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why I consider it to be just such a doggone honor and privilege to be able to, you know, drive this bus of the Dawson Academy and carry on his legacy.
Yeah. And it's awesome. And you're the perfect guy for this too, because you can relate with some of these younger dentists. And today we're going to be talking about some of the things that are missing when dentists start this trajectory, because it's not like this clear shot. Like, you just don't go to the Dawson Academy and then you come back and get rid of all these insurances and people come in with cash. Like, it's an evolution. And so let's go into that. And, you know, because you're talking to young, you recently had a hands-on class, which is amazing. People coming back, and now they're coming back in droves. And then you've got your seminar one coming up in June 10th. And 11th, which we'll talk about in a little bit on Orlando.
Yeah.
But these kids come and you interact with them. What are they missing, or what are you communicating with them about them when you're seeing them face to face?
Yeah, you know, the interesting thing with the younger dentists that are coming out these days is that they're very energized. They're very excited. It seems that the education that the younger dentists are coming out of school with today, I really think that they're a little bit more prepared for private practice than they ever have been. They just need a little bit of experience. But, you know, the trap that I see a lot of dentists fall into is that they think that they have got to immediately conform into this insurance dictated model. And now I'll say this, I want to qualify what I'm going to say with a little pre-statement.
Okay.
Number one is, you know, we like to badmouth insurance, and what I don't want to do is say that insurance is a bad thing, because insurance in a lot of ways is a great thing, because it's one of those things that a lot of patients have, which helps them to pay for their care. And it's not going to go away. But what we need to do is, instead of complaining and making insurance a source of negativity, is look at it for the source of positivity that it is. Now, when I say that, it doesn't mean that we just fall into line with insurance and let them control our practice, let them control our fees, let them treatment plan for us, and to allow the insurance company to create that wedge or barrier between the patient and us. And insurance companies love to do that. They love to create that wedge of deniability. Well, this is now denied. This procedure wasn't necessary. your fees are outside of customary and usual. You're not in network. All these different rules that they have in place where they try to keep us boxed into a corner, right. You know, but we don't necessarily have to play that game. And so I get the problem that a lot of young dentists have is they come out of school, they're coming out of school with more debt than ever. And, everybody's anxious. Most young dentists are not ready to own their own practice. So a lot of times, what does that mean? They got to look for an associateship. So a lot of times practices that are looking for associateships, they're insurance-based practices. And, you know, these dentists kind of dive in and they just become indoctrinated into that model of care. And the reality is, yes, a lot of our patients have insurance and they want to maximize it. But where we really kind of box ourselves into the corner is that we stop giving patients ability to choose to do what's best for them. And we start to recommend treatment based on what insurance will pay for. And those are two different things.
Yeah. So, and go a little bit further in that, you know, because it isn't all about, you know, I don't know, would you agree with this? I get the same conversations you're dealing on the clinical side. I'm like, no, you can't just spend all your energy on like insurance. You got to start charting a path to be really good at something. Because when you're really good at something over time, people are going to look for you and they're going to find you, and they're not going to reach into their pocket and just pay for something they would consider a little bit of the same. That's where the discretionary dentistry comes from over time. Now, your goal is not the money. Your goal is to get good at something. And just like Pete taught me at the ripe old age of 24, it's the byproduct. Dentists, right. Don't, like, you make a lot of money. Would you agree with that? Like being good at something?
Yeah, well, absolutely. You know, if you enjoy what you're doing and if you treat people in dentistry ethically and responsibly, the money will come to you. If you're always chasing money and if you're always trying to make clinical decisions or try to move patients in a certain direction for the sake of money, you're always going to be chasing it. Right. Because really, when you think about who makes the most money in the world, the people that make the most money in the world are the people that solve the biggest problem. So if you want to be financially successful in your career, you need to learn to solve problems. Right. And a lot of people's problems are a lot bigger than I've got occlusal decay in tooth number 19, or this patient needs scaling root planing, or they need a crown on this one tooth. A lot of our patients that have bigger problems have very complicated, comprehensive, complete type of problems. And that's what you got to be able to learn to solve. You got to be able to help people with TMJ problems. You have to be able to help people with occlusal muscular pain. You need to be able to help people with a worn dentition. You need to be able to help people that are partially edentulous, people that have a terminal dentition, and you need to be able to transition them into implant-supported prosthesis. You need to be able to solve problems. And really, dental school, I mean, they do a good job preparing us, but they teach us to solve small problems. And most of our patients have bigger problems.
Yeah, but let me preempt. You already know where I'm going to go. I'm going to lead you with this. But Lenny, I don't have patients with TMJ problems in practice, right? Like, I don't see any of that. Like, you've heard that before, haven't you?
Yeah. Well, the reality is, when you think about how many patients that you have in your practice right now that may have clicking or popping temporomandibular joints, I would guess that the number is probably between 60 and 70%. And if you have a very heavily adult patient population, it's probably towards that 70 degree mark. And here's the crazy thing, Kurt, the thing that always cracks me up about TMJ issues is that a lot of dentists don't like to treat them because they think, well, maybe the patient's crazy or whatever. Right. But the biggest problem the dentists don't like treating is that they just don't know what to do. They don't know how to properly diagnose it. They don't know how to make the joints restorable again. And then if they make the joints restorable again, they don't know how to transfer that stability into the dentition in a permanent manner. So it's kind of like a big problem. But, you know, the most complicated joint in the human body is the temporomandibular joint. And guess whose responsibility that joint is? It's ours, dentists. And if you know, the problem with if you had any other joint in your body that was clicking and popping, you would be pretty doggone concerned. You'd go to the orthopedist and be like, man, you know, my knee is just, it's clicking and clacking and it wasn't doing that before. And, you know, the orthopedist is going to be concerned because if the joint's making noise, that means that there is something from an anatomical or a physiologic standpoint, which has created that condition that's making that joint click and pop. Yet in dentistry, we're in charge of this joint, yet what we tell people all the time is, well, if you have clicking and popping joints, well, a lot of people do, and if it doesn't hurt, don't worry about it. And I just think that's so awful because there are so many people out there that need to be helped. And so many people that don't have to live with that. And so many people at the same time that it may not be a painful problem now. It may not be causing a perceptible issue right now, but it doesn't mean it's not going to be that way in the future. And it's our obligation to keep people from getting worse.
The Best Practices Show with Kirk Behrendt is brought to you exclusively by ACT Dental, the ultimate provider of dental practice management solutions for dentists and their teams. ACT Dental is committed to helping you build a better practice and a better life. If you're looking to grow your production, motivate your team, get back on track, and create the practice you've always dreamed about, look no further. Give us a call at 800-851-8186 or visit us at actdental.com.
And one of the things that I learned from you guys is, you know, go to all these courses, you learn about how to do, you know, diagnose, learn about dentistry, create, but managing forces is one of the, I think it's like the neglected piece of dentistry. And Pete said that years ago, like, you got to understand forces. And with people living longer, I mean, that's like the piece that people don't talk about in courses that much anymore, right?
Yeah. Well, when, you know, back to what we were talking about with what do the younger dentists need to do? Well, the first thing they need to do is they need to learn right away. So what dental school taught you was to pass an examination of minimal competency, and it makes you ready to go out and do basic procedures in dentistry. But you need to immediately, every young dentist needs to start taking continuing education, and they need to start to learn about these more complicated problems, about doing a better diagnosis, about treatment planning better, about learning to handle multi-unit prosthodontic cases in a very efficient, predictable, and profitable way. And so most of these young dentists coming out of school, even though they're so in debt, you know, the last thing you want to tell them is you need to start investing in CE right out of school. But that's the honest to God truth. But the truth sometimes hurts a little bit. But you need to learn a system. You need to learn to diagnose. You need to learn to treatment plan. And you need to predictably and profitably learn how to restore and manage these more complicated cases.
For sure. And, you know, you heard this one too. But Lenny, you know, I learned all that in dental school. Type of a thing. Like, what are you, and I know exactly where you're going with this, and I'll just add one piece of the answer, but I want to hear your answer. Is like, it's not so much the information. You're going to find that dentistry is potentially isolating, especially if you want to get good at it. And what's really cool about being around people at the Dawson Academy is it's not so much, but your fire is lit. You come back and you're on fire. You know, you meet great people, you're excited. You can start to apply those things in a way that you're like, somebody understands me. They understand my language.
Yeah. Right? Well, yeah. When people come to our first seminar, you know, the biggest reaction that people get is they feel like a veil has been lifted. Or almost when you talk with somebody that has cataracts and they had cataract surgery and they're like, oh my gosh, all of a sudden I can see everything that I was missing before. And I didn't realize that I didn't know how to see it.
Right.
And that's the biggest thing is all of a sudden you have this awareness of aesthetics on a different level, on a functional level, and how the bite and how our five requirements of occlusal stability, or how the anterior guidance not being in harmony with the envelope of function, and how that relates to the joint position and the difference between centric relation and maximum intercuspation, and how this affects everything that we do and how it causes so many of the failures that we experience in dentistry as well. That's the biggest thing. It's like all of a sudden they know things and see things that they weren't seeing before. And it can sometimes be a little bit demoralizing, but ultimately for everybody, it becomes an empowering thing. Knowledge is empowering.
Right. And you guys have, I mean, you got it'd be interesting to see how many collective years you guys have as far as training dentists, but you're talking about diagnostic, you know, models, frameworks where stuff isn't made up. It's not off the hip. It's not off of like, we just put this together. It's years and years and years of, you know, you mentioned the word failure, but we've also learned how to predictably diagnose, treatment plan some of the most challenging cases in dentistry, right?
Well, yeah, absolutely. You think about, well, who do we take study models on in dentistry? Who are the patients that dentists are like, oh, I got to take impressions of their teeth.
Difficult.
It's not the people with beautiful teeth. It's the people with bad teeth.
Right.
Right. And then you start getting into these problems of, well, gosh, these teeth are worn. Are they in the right position or not? How do I figure out where they are? How do I figure out where to put them in the right position? How do I know I'm going to get them to be functionally correct? How am I going to make sure they're aesthetically correct? And how am I going to make sure that the patient's comfortable in these teeth? Well, maybe I got to open vertical dimension. Well, there's no topic more confusing to a general dentist than starting to alter the vertical dimension and to really understand what that truly means and the times that it's appropriate to open vertical dimension and the times that it's not, but also the times when if you can learn to work in centric relation, how most of the time you think you need to open up the vertical dimension, but centric relation provides you restorative room that you need. And these are just kind of very sometimes difficult concepts to just learn on your own. You need a shaman, you need a mentor, you need a guide, a leader to help you to learn these concepts and apply them in a hands-on environment so that way you can comfortably and confidently go back in and start to do this. You know, if you added up all the money that dentists have spent on continuing education in their careers that they never really applied anything they learned, it's a lot of money.
Right. That's so true. So popular topic in dentistry right now is digital versus analog and the chasm between it. So if I'm a young dentist, I'm listening, I haven't made the conversion to digital. I don't know if I can be ready. Or let's go to the other side of the chasm. Well, I'm really into digital. I don't know if they teach that kind of stuff. Can you talk about that, you know, that big conversation and how you see it in the middle of those two?
Yeah. Well, the good news is the gap is getting smaller. The size discrepancy that we're at between analog and digital is it's shrinking. And the Dawson Academy, we very much embrace the digital spectrum. And everything that we do, we're refining and we're transitioning into that digital environment, whether it comes to making your models, where it comes to digitally recording a buccal bite into centric relation, whether it means doing your diagnostic waxing digitally and printing models of your provisionals and all that good stuff. We fully embrace that. And what we're doing right now is that we're figuring out, just like what we've been doing in the Dawson Academy since 1979, is we're figuring out the best way and the most predictable way for dentists to introduce this into their environment. You know, we love to talk about digital, but eventually we can't forget that everything still ends up becoming digital. And what I mean by that is we still have to use these digits to put it in the mouth. So whether you like it or not, you still need, even if you say, well, I'm a digital dentist, that's great, but you still need to manage a patient's occlusion in their mouth.
Right.
And that happens in an analog way. You still need to have clinical skills. The computer can't do everything. The software can't do everything. Ultimately, you have to be able to take that information that you've worked out in the digital environment and figure out the predictable and profitable way to work that out into the patient's mouth.
Yeah. One of the things I want you to talk about is the difference between the hands-on experience and the actual coursework that you guys do. Because a lot of people have... So I wanted to go to the Dawson Academy. Okay, help me understand. Like, what's the path here? Where would I start? Do I just start with seminar one? What if I wanted, you know, I like the hands-on experience. How do you guys separate the two or put them together in the learning experience if I've never been to the Dawson Academy?
Well, we have a 7-course core curriculum, and it's broken up into a logical sequence of building confidence and clinical skills as you move forward. So the ultimate... The best entry point for everybody is our first seminar, which is a 2-day seminar, and it's called Functional Occlusion in Introduction to Problem Solving. And that's exactly what it is we start exposing you to all these aesthetic and functional and anatomical concepts to give you that knowledge base so that way you learn what you need to learn. So when we take you into that hands-on environment, that you have that foundation that you need. So that's our first course. Our first hands-on course is called Complete Examination and Records. And that's where we teach you the diagnostic photographs that you need to learn. We teach you how to take a centric relation bite registration, how to use a FACEVO, how to use an articulator correctly. You know, we give you that really good foundation of data collection and recording diagnostic information. Our second course after that is our second hands-on course. It's actually our third course in the core curriculum. And this is our hands-on treatment planning course. And this is a course where we're going to take you and we're going to give you five very complicated cases from start to finish. And we're going to teach you how to work these cases up from a complete examination all the way through to getting ready to take provisionals and put those in the patient's mouth. And that's a great experience because a lot of these cases are, for most general dentists, are seemingly impossible or they seem overly complicated. Like, I'm just not ready to handle these types of cases. But when we teach you the methodology of how to properly treatment plan, we can take these very complicated restorative cases, and I love seeing the look on dentists' faces when they take these complicated problems, break them into their individual components, learn to solve them one at a time in the correct sequence, and these really impossible cases start coming together like puzzle pieces, and it just happens right before their eyes. And I love that. That's so gratifying for me.
Yeah.
Our other courses are the art and science of equilibration, how you absolutely need to learn how to manage patient's occlusion and meet the five requirements of occlusal stability. And then we get into our hands-on aesthetic course, which is our what we call aesthetic foundations. And that's where we teach you how to really apply, how to make teeth look beautiful and also functional so they last. You know, everybody thinks that, well, if I had a crown or if I put veneers in somebody's mouth and they lasted 5 years, that somehow I've achieved clinical success. Well, if you have patients that start having problems with their dentistry in 3 or 4 or 5 years, you're going to have a long-term problem on your hands. It's called your reputation. But dentistry can last decades. You can have veneers that it can last decades and full mouth rehabilitations that can be stable and the result can last 20 or 30 years. But you have to learn the principles and you have to get that foundation to be able to make dentistry that predictable.
Yeah, this is all. I could keep you for another hour. And I know I don't get you forever. I have so many more questions, but I do want to ask this one. As we're shooting this, we are in the middle of May. You and I have never seen a time like this. I mean, I'm starved. You guys have embraced back in person. Can you just talk about that? Because while the rest of the industry is a little bit slow, you guys are doing hands-on face-to-face courses. What is that like? What are you guys learning?
We are. Well, we went back live last September. So we've been back at it for about 7 months now where everything has been live again. I mean, we're obviously taking a lot of precautions. We have, you know, plexiglass dividers. Everybody gets their temperature checked every day. They're filling out their forms. And, you know, it's a lot easier now that most everybody that's coming in now has been vaccinated. So, you know, the tension, so to speak, is a lot lower. But, you know, the response has been crazy. I mean, our hands-on courses are nearly sold out every single class. And I was really surprised by how quickly people were ready to come back. But when you think about it, heck, what we do every day is a lot more risky than sitting in a course with a mask on.
Heck yeah. Heck yeah. So now talk about June 10th and 11th. You guys are going to be doing seminar one in Orlando.
Yeah.
So other details. So it's a two-day course.
Two-day
right?
course. Yep.
Okay.
It'll be myself. It'll be Dr. John Cranham, who is my predecessor as a clinical director. You know, John was ready to start to slow down and step back a little bit. And he kind of turned the reins over to me, but he's still very involved with us. So he'll be still involved in some of our larger lecture formats, like our first seminar or our last seminar in the core curriculum, which is called Advanced Problem Solving. And that's a 2.5-day course where we show you about the most bewildering cases that you can encounter as a restorative dentist. But it'll be John and myself, and we're going to be live. So if you're ready to get out of the house and you want to take your family to Disney World, or you just want to get where it's fun and start interacting with people, I'll tell you a great story, Kirk, is that last month we had our third seminar three, our advanced problem solving course. And it was in Florida there. And we could only max it out at 100 dentists. And so we had 100 dentists in the room. We had 40 more that we had to turn away that wanted to be at this course. But the energy of having all these people back live again and people being reunited with people that they met during the last year or so as they've been going through our curriculum, it was great. Like every time we took a break, we couldn't get them to settle down. We couldn't get people to shut up and stop talking because they were just so happy to socialize and interact with people again. It was great to see.
Yeah, I might just come hang out with you guys because I'm dying for that myself. Now, again, do you have 5 more minutes? Because you know what time it is?
Yeah.
That time where we get to know a little bit more about our guests. So if you don't mind, and again, compliments to Len Tao who gave me this. I love this. I'm having so much fun. This is like not even legal how much fun I'm having. So we're going to play a little game with our guests. I like to get to know you guys a little bit more. Now, I actually gave you a little bit of hint on the first one. So here, we're going to play Would You Rather today. And the first question, I'm going to give you a couple. Would you rather be friends with Justin Timberlake or Justin Bieber, and why?
Well, I would totally be friends more with JT, you know, probably because he's a little closer in age to me. He likes to golf. I love to golf. I think his music is a whole lot better than Justin Bieber's, unfortunately. But hey, not to hate on the Biebs, but JT would be my pick there.
Yeah, mine too. And I actually think it would be fun hanging out with Biebs just to learn, but you'd be like, wow, that's fascinating. There are so many things that Timberlake does that you're like, that is so wickedly talented. Like, that is so good. Like, I can't stop thinking about the Country Music Awards. He shows up at the Country Music Awards and like blows the whole show. Like, is there anything you can't do type of a thing? So
you got to respect the longevity too in his career.
Yeah. Okay. So I don't even know what these are. So I just shake them up. So I apologize in advance. Okay. Would you rather carry a doll around and pretend it's real or talk to yourself out loud in front of others? That's kind of an easy one. So,
I talk out loud in front of others all the time, so that's not a problem, but I would love the challenge of carrying around a baby. And you know, ultimately, I love acting. You know, I really love getting into character roles. And, you know, my fiance, I drive her crazy because she can never tell when I'm being serious or not, because I'll get into something and I'll commit. So, that sounds like a great challenge to commit to.
Yeah, I would have to. I mean, I enjoy talking out loud and even embarrassing my kids or so. That's kind of an easy one, too. So
we like to when my fiance, Shelly, and I, we go out to dinner is when we've had a few drinks and we're having a little bit of fun, we play this game where every time the waiter or waitress comes back to the table, we just start having an outrageous conversation. Like the waiter or waitress probably goes back to the kitchen and is like, you're not going to believe what my table's talking about. Like, I'll talk about
you go like, I can't believe you would say that. Excuse me. Like something like that.
I'll talk about, well, you know, it turns out he did murder that person and they only went to jail for a year because, you know, just some crazy things.
That's awesome. All right. This one's a good one. Would you rather go back 5 years or skip ahead 5 years in your life?
Wow. That's a great question. I would have to say I'd rather go back because I don't want to give away 5 years. Life's too short to give it away.
I know.
It's one of those things where you always, you learn so much that not necessarily you would do different, but you would, life experience is an amazing thing to help you to make better decisions, right? Because that's ultimately what we want to do is we want to make better decisions.
Yeah, I agree. And I've made some bad ones. So I'm actually on your, I'm totally on your side of this one because maybe I'm 51 and maybe that your personal age right now has a lot to do with that. But
Well, you don't want to skip ahead to 56, do you?
No, I don't. Not at all. Not at all. I'm trying to slow things down. Okay. One last one. Would you rather intern with Mark Zuckerberg or Elon Musk?
Elon Musk by far.
Why?
Elon Musk is, so, you know, back when I was saying earlier, when you think about, who are the wealthiest people or the people that make the most money, they solve the biggest problems. Well, you know, Elon Musk quickly became one of the wealthiest people in the world because he's always solving huge problems. Right. You know, he's created an electric car that people actually want to drive or they want to be seen in it. And it's cool and it's sexy. You know, he's figuring out a way to bring high-speed internet to rural communities through those small little satellites. He's, you know, got that boring company where he's digging tunnels. He's got SpaceX where he, you know, created this monumental challenge of trying to make getting things into space cheap. And he did it. And, you know, NASA tried to do it forever. I mean, he's just a brilliant person. I mean, Zuckerberg, he's a cool dude, but he created something that's probably the worst thing that's ever happened to humanity, right? Where Elon Musk is, he's creating things that are actually helping humanity.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it would also be fascinating to see how Musk interacts with others, because he's probably so far out there. Like, everything he does hasn't been done yet. So how do you communicate with people about where we're going to go? I mean, I have a hard enough time trying to explain a course or what we're going to do for dinner, you know, with people. I don't know how you're going to do that. Like, I would love to see how he communicates, you know?
Well, you think about the monumental challenge that sometimes it feels like when we want to create something new, just even in our profession.
Right.
And the headwinds that sometimes we have to fight to get things up and running. And think about the monumental things that he has created and the absolute dedication and organizational skills, and being able to clearly communicate your vision to so many people that they can actually carry out what it is that you envision. I mean, that, I think it's just amazing to think about. It's, I mean, we're not going to, he's one of these people that comes along, you know, once every 300 or 400 years, and, you know, 300 years from now, people will be talking about Elon Musk. 300 or 400 years from now, people won't know who Mark Zuckerberg is, because we'll move beyond whatever we are at now, you know?
Yeah. I'm sure Elon Musk doesn't use the 7 most expensive words in dentistry. That's the way we've always done it. He's
That's
just
so true.
Yeah. Well, I am so grateful, Lenny. Thank you for being on. I am going to have you back again and again, and we'll cover other things. If you're listening, make sure you check out the Dawson Seminar 1, which is June 10th and 11th in Orlando. We're going to put a link down below. And even if you have questions, feel free to reach out to Lenny or anybody at the Dawson Academy. Just an awesome group of people. So make sure you check it out. So thanks for being on, and stick around while we say goodbye to everybody else. So thank you guys for listening to the Best Practice Show, or watching. You're probably listening, though, because you don't like the videos. I get it. So if you enjoyed today like I did, just do me a favor. Hit the share button. Share with your friends. Keep sending us suggestions for things that you guys want to see. And until we see you guys next time, keep watching the Best Practices Show. You guys enjoy the rest of your day.
Peace. See you guys later.
And there you have it. Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Best Practices Show. I hope you sure did enjoy it. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out to us. We are always here for you. And if you haven't done so already, make sure you subscribe to the show on iTunes or wherever you consume podcasts. And if you really enjoy it, you can leave a comment or a 4 or 5 star review. But until we see you next time, keep watching the Best Practices Show.